Hey guys, welcome to another episode of True Crimes and Weird Times. I'm Kim.
I'm Ashley.
And today, I will be telling you about the mysterious death of Charles C. Morgan, a man who died under mysterious circumstances after being kidnapped just 2 months before. Not only that, but he would later be linked to none other than Danny Casolaro.
Ooh, okay.
Charles Morgan was 39 years old in March of 1977. He lived in Tucson, Arizona with his wife, Ruth, and their four daughters. On March 22nd, Charles got up as usual, drove his daughters to school, and then headed off towards work. Except he never made it to the office. Charles disappeared.
Oh, wow. We're starting off early.
Oh, yeah. Right off the bat. 3 days later, at 2 in the morning, his wife, Ruth, was awoken by a thump at the back door, and she heard the dog start barking. So she goes and opens the door to find her husband, Charles, standing there.
Oh.
He was missing a shoe. He had one plastic handcuff around his ankle and another set of cuffs around his wrists. Uh-huh. Now, everything I read called them plastic handcuffs, but in the episode of Unsolved Mysteries over the case, they show them as zip ties, and I did find one other source that called them zip ties, so I think that plastic handcuffs are meant to be zip ties.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Okay.
Now, of course, Ruth is asking him, you know, where have you been? What happened? All the things you would normally ask your spouse after they've been missing for 3 days.
Right.
Except Charles didn't speak. He just, like, pointed at his throat. He hadn't said a word so far.
Huh.
So Ruth asks him, she's like, can you talk? And he shakes his head no. She says, well, can you write? And he nods yes. So she found a pen and paper, and she brought it to him so he could write down what had happened. According to Charles, he had been kidnapped and tortured over the past few days. He told her that they had painted his throat with a hallucinogenic drug, which could either drive him permanently insane or even destroy his nervous system and kill him.
Oh my God.
He also had her move the car immediately. Like, that was one of the first things he wrote was, go move the car, move it right now.
Uh-huh.
They can't know that I'm home.
Oh, okay.
Now, he never told her who they were. He didn't say who kidnapped him. He only ever referred to the perpetrators as them or they.
Okay. Did he know who they were, though?
I can only assume that he knew, but he wasn't going to tell his wife.
Okay.
Now, Ruth, of course, wants to call police, and she wants to take him to the doctor, and she wants to, you know, get authority figures involved here. But Charles was adamantly against it, claiming that if she went to police or took him to a doctor, they would be signing a death warrant for the entire family.
Okay, so that sounds a lot like he knew who it was.
Yeah. And he knew exactly how dangerous they were, too. But what exactly was it that made Charles Morgan, who was seemingly just a father, a husband, a normal working guy, a target for kidnap and torture?
Yeah.
That kind of depends on who you ask. Charles was the president of a successful escrow agency called Statewide Escrow, which had gotten him into business with at least one mafia family, possibly the one led by Joseph Bonanno Sr., and possibly even more families than that.
Wow, okay. That makes more sense.
In the 1970s, Arizona became a very attractive place to live for members of organized crime. The reason for this was a state law that allowed them to buy land through blind trust accounts, which meant criminals could anonymously purchase land, legitimizing the money along the way using the escrow accounts to purchase gold bullion and platinum and, in short, Charles had gotten himself mixed up in money laundering for the mafia.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Which brings us to our next point about Charles. He had recently become a potential witness in a state land fraud case involving a known mob leader. Charles was reportedly a reluctant witness, like mm-hmm. they kind of had to make him testify.
Yeah.
But the legal system had recently been trying to crack down on the money laundering happening in Arizona, and they needed testimony from people like Charles who were running these escrow accounts.
Yep, that's a lot of trouble.
Charles also reportedly saved copies of all the illegal transactions he made for the mafia, most likely believing that this would save him from harm should the members turn on him. He can say, hey, I've got these documents, back off.
Right.
However, that's not the only potential reason. Over the following week or so, Ruth slowly nursed Charles back to health. She had to feed him water through an eyedropper. I mean, he couldn't drink, he couldn't eat, he couldn't speak for over a week.
Mm-hmm.
And she just slowly nursed him back to health.
Wow.
And during this time, Charles wrote down to her that they had taken his treasury identification.
Huh.
Now, if you didn't already know, the Secret Service handles cases of fraud against the government.
Mm-hmm.
And until 2003, it was actually part of the Department of Treasury, whereas now it's part of Homeland Security.
Okay.
So that means he would have been referring to the Treasury ID as in Secret Service, as in helping the federal government track down people.
Right.
He goes on to tell Ruth that he had been working for the Treasury for about 2 to 3 years as an undercover agent, helping them to take down organized crime members.
Huh. That was some news for Ruth, huh?
Yes. So this was the first time Ruth had ever heard of this. And she was like, what are you talking about? But he refused to go into any more detail. He wouldn't say anything else to her.
That's super frustrating.
Ruth said that at some point, Charles had told her in the past that there was indeed some kind of money laundering going on in his business. Maybe not necessarily his own business, but in the type of business he's in.
Right.
He told her that he was not personally involved in it, but he also told her that the less she and the girls knew about it, the better.
Yeesh.
After the kidnapping, Charles knew that it was only a matter of time before he would be attacked again. So he started wearing a bulletproof vest at all times. He began carrying a gun everywhere he went, and he made sure he was the only person permitted to drive his girls to and from school.
Oh, wow.
He even contacted the school to make sure they knew no one except for him was to pick his kids up.
Wow.
He also told his family that should something happen to him, they would find a letter telling them who was responsible, what had happened, and why they did it.
Oh, geez.
However, in all the years since, no such letter has ever been found.
Oh. Spoiler alert. Just kidding.
Yep, sorry, guys.
It's not in the title of the podcast or anything.
Right. Despite all of these precautions, 2 months later, in May of 1977, Charles disappeared a second time. Now, Ruth held out hope that Charles would once again come stumbling through the door at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
But the days went on, and she didn't hear anything. 9 days after Charles's second disappearance, Ruth received an anonymous phone call from a woman.
Huh.
The woman said, Ruthie? And she said, yes, that's me. And the woman said, Chuck is all right. Ecclesiastes 12, 1 through 8.
Huh.
And then she hung up.
Okay.
Now, the passage doesn't really answer any questions, and Ruth was unable to find any meaning in the verses,
uh-huh.
but I am going to go ahead and read it to you anyway, because if nothing else, it seems pretty ominous given the situation.
Okay.
The passage reads, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. When the keepers in the house tremble and the strong men stoop. When the grinders cease because they are few and those looking through the windows grow dim. When the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades. When people rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint. When people are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets. When the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred. Then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about the street. Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless.
Huh. I got nothing.
Yeah, it's a really strange passage to quote to her,
right,
trying to tell her that her husband is okay. But this passage specifically will have more meaning later that we'll talk about in a few minutes. It's not the only time we'll hear about this Bible verse.
Okay.
Verses. 2 days after the mysterious phone call, the body of Charles Morgan was found in the desert about 40 miles west of Tucson.
Mm.
Medical examiners said he had been dead for less than 12 hours when the body was discovered.
Oh, wow. That's kind of unusual considering he's just out in the desert, right?
He was nearby his car. He wasn't just like wandering through the desert. He was just off the highway.
Okay.
But also considering the fact that he had gone missing 11 days prior.
That's true. Okay.
Charles had been shot once in the back of the head with his own .357 Magnum revolver. He was still wearing his bulletproof vest as well as a belt that had a hidden knife and a holster attached to it.
Okay.
His car was nearby, like I said, and when police searched it, they found some really bizarre things. First of all, police found that the car had been modified so that it could be unlocked from the fender.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. They also found several weapons and a whole stash of ammunition.
His?
Yes, belonging to Charles.
Okay.
They also found handwritten directions to the crime scene in Charles's handwriting in the car.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Meaning he would have written down directions at some point on how to get to this location.
Right.
And probably the strangest thing was that in the back seat, wrapped in a white handkerchief, police found a single tooth belonging to Charles.
What? Okay, maybe somebody knocked it out.
And he saved it?
And he saved it. I don't know. Can it be fixed?
I don't know.
Huh. Unless he was planning on faking his death.
Maybe. A single tooth, though.
DNA. This is the 70s. Would they have even looked for that? I don't know.
Also, somewhere at the scene, police found a pair of sunglasses that did not belong to Charles. Now, I can't really say where they were located. Some sources say they were near the body. Some say they were in the car. One source even said that Charles was wearing them.
Huh.
But on the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they showed the sunglasses kind of in the car. So I'm just going to go with that.
Okay.
That they were in the car.
Okay.
Now, the gun was found near the body, but it had been wiped clean of any fingerprints.
Well, of course.
And for that matter, no fingerprints were found at the scene at all.
Of course.
Police did, however, find gunshot residue on Charles's hand. Which, I mean, how did he wipe down a gun if he shot himself in the head?
Yeah.
The most puzzling thing investigators found, though, was a $2 bill pinned inside Charles's underwear.
Okay, this is getting, like, I can't put anything together.
I know. This case, I mean, I've been poring over this case for days because every time I think that, like, maybe there's an answer to this here, it just leads to more questions.
Well, so far, yeah, I got nothing.
Now, the $2 bill gets even weirder because it wasn't just a $2 bill.
Okay.
On the bill, Charles had written several things. And we will post some pictures of this $2 bill on our social media because there are pictures of it out there. You can see it. On the front of the $2 bill, he had written 7 Spanish surnames, and they were in alphabetical order, and they went from A to G, which are the first 7 letters of the alphabet.
Okay.
Then above that, he had written Ecclesiastes 12 and had drawn arrows to the number 1 and to the number 8 in the bill's serial number, which indicated verses 1 through 8, what? The same passage that the woman gave Ruth over the phone.
Right.
On the back of the $2 bill, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, you know, the picture printed on the bill.
Uh-huh.
The signers had been numbered 1 through 7, just like the 7 names on the front.
So you're trying to write some kind of code?
There's more. Hang on.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to make sense.
I know. It doesn't make sense yet. Or we'll get there. There was also a crudely drawn map on the back of this bill, which led to an area between Tucson and Mexico, the towns of Robles Junction and Sasebe, both of which were towns known for smuggling.
Oh, okay.
Now, Don Devereaux, who I'm going to tell you all about in a minute, believes that the bill was a code meant for the FBI.
Okay.
But the reason it can't be decoded, according to Don Devereaux, is because we're missing the other half of it. Okay. Whatever the bill is giving clues to is a mystery. We don't know what document or book or whatever it is that this clue goes to.
Mm-hmm.
And since we just don't know what this code is meant to say, I mean, we don't have anything to compare it to. We have no way to decipher this code at all. So instead, we just have a very puzzling clue that leaves more questions than answers.
Yeah, I can see that.
Possibly related. Charles was also supposedly a member of the Freemasons.
Oh, okay. Why are they always involved?
That is a great question.
Looking at you, Freemasons.
2 days after Charles's death, a woman who called herself Green Eyes called the Pima County Sheriff's Department, who was investigating Charles's death.
Okay.
She claimed to be the same woman who had called Ruth a few days prior. Green Eyes said that she knew Charles and that she had actually met with him at a motel a few days before his death.
Mm-hmm.
She said that Charles had told her there was a contract out on him. He then showed her a suitcase full of money, full of cash, and said that he had found the hitman and had arranged a deal for him to pay out the contract in exchange for his life.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a very good idea.
No, it does not. Not at all. Police actually confirmed that Charles had been staying in a Westside motel for over a week before he was shot. Which means Charles was not kidnapped this time around. He disappeared on his own.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ruth insisted that she did not believe her husband was having an affair with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
They had been married for 19 years, and she just felt that she would have noticed if he had been cheating on her, if something was weird. And she just was very adamant that he was not having an affair with this woman. She doesn't know who she is,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't think it's anything like that.
Right. Okay. Well, I wouldn't either. That'd be the last thing on my mind.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very romantic to me.
Yeah.
Now, Ashley.
Oh, yes.
Can you guess what his death was ruled as?
Well, let me guess suicide.
Yep.
I knew it. I didn't know you could off yourself on the back of the head. But, okay.
Oh, yeah. Let's go over some of the things that police have complete knowledge of at the time of this suicide claim.
Uh-huh.
First off, he was shot in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the gun was wiped clean of fingerprints, which dead people cannot do.
Right.
Someone else's sunglasses were in his car.
Mm-hmm.
He had weapons, ammo, and was wearing a bulletproof vest. Those are not things people do when they want to die.
Exactly.
Those things help you do the opposite of dying. Yep. And they also had that tip from Green Eyes about what happened and were able to confirm at least part of her story.
Yeah. So why the suicide?
Well, in the original airing of the Unsolved Mysteries episode, a sheriff deputy is interviewed on that episode, and he says that several of the investigators felt very strongly that it was a homicide, actually.
Uh-huh.
Like, there were plenty of police officers who were like, somebody killed this guy.
Yeah.
But it was still ruled a suicide. And shortly after this case, all of those investigators left law enforcement completely.
Oh, really?
With two of them even leaving the country because they were in fear for their lives.
Oh, gotcha. Wink, wink.
So, according to this episode and this officer's interview, police were well aware that this was a murder. Absolutely no questions asked. But they had no choice but to call it a suicide.
Right. Well, it kind of lets you know who could possibly be involved.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's not even close to the end. There's so much more things that happen around this man's death. It is insane.
Okay.
3 weeks after Charles's death, two men claiming to be FBI agents showed up at Ruth's front door. They did show ID to her, but she says that they flipped them open and closed very quickly, and they told her that they needed to come inside and look through the house.
That's something you see in movies. Sorry.
Right. I know. I kept thinking about, you know, Supernatural when Sam and Dean are always flashing the fake, the fake FBI IDs real quick.
Right.
That's what I kept seeing in my head reading this. Now, Ruth let them inside the house, and they absolutely tore it apart.
Wow.
They never told Ruth what they were looking for, but whatever it was, they didn't find it because they didn't take anything.
Unless they were looking for those papers or evidence or whatever he had.
That's my thought. I feel like they were definitely there to look for something that this guy supposedly had.
Right.
Now, Ruth was so upset and flustered over what was happening at this moment. I mean, her husband's just been killed. She's just found out it's a suicide. She obviously doesn't believe that. And now these men have showed up at the door claiming to be FBI agents. And I know, so she was so flustered that she didn't think to write down their names.
Right. No, that makes sense.
And it's very easy to say, well, why would she even let them in her house? She didn't get to look at the ID. She doesn't know who these people are. But the reality is, that was probably the safest and best thing she could have done in that situation.
Yeah.
Because someone had her husband murdered. Someone had her husband kidnapped and tortured.
Yep.
There is no reason to think that they wouldn't have killed her as well to get inside that house.
Exactly. So even if she didn't think about it and she just let them in, like, that kind of worked in her favor.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this was the end of Charles's case for 22 years.
Wow.
Police had ruled it a suicide. Everyone just kind of put their heads down and they just ignored it. They went on with their lives. They just, that was that. But in 1990, the Unsolved Mysteries episode aired for the first time. And that sparked a whole new conspiracy around this case. Working on the case for Unsolved Mysteries was an investigative journalist named Don Devereaux.
Hey.
After the episode aired, Don actually received a good amount of tips from the public.
Really?
And many of those leads actually panned out.
Okay.
It's because of Don and this episode that we know Charles was laundering money for the mafia and that he was involved in billions, like billion with a B, dollars worth of gold and platinum transactions.
Yeah. Wow.
It's also how we know that Charles was keeping duplicate records of the illegal transactions.
Mm.
So all of those important factors to this case didn't come out until this episode aired.
That's insane. That's 22 years.
22 years.
I wonder who the tips came from.
I have no idea. I have also wondered that. Who would know these things this far in the future that they would think, I should call and let them know? Maybe people who worked with him or...
Yeah, they're literally just sitting there watching Unsolved Mysteries. It's like, huh.
Yeah, I think that guy was laundering money for the mafia. I should tell somebody about
it. I know
it.
That guy. Like, that's weird. Jeez.
Don Devereaux believes that Charles was killed for having those records.
Yeah.
Which would make sense when you factor in the quote-unquote FBI agents tearing the house apart. Which, on that topic, he also claimed in the episode that he had contacted the FBI with a Freedom of Information Act to get their case files on Charles Morgan.
Okay.
Dawn claims that previously they had tons of people on this case. Uh-huh. Like, they were all over this case, the FBI was.
Uh-huh.
However, when he asked for those files, the FBI basically said, Charles Morgan, never heard of him.
Really?
Yep. They claimed to have zero knowledge of this man or who he was or how he died. Nothing. Never heard of him.
Oh, gee, how convenient.
Mm-hmm. Here's where it gets even crazier. 3 months after the episode aired, a man named Doug Johnston was found shot to death in his car right outside his office in Phoenix.
Okay.
Now, Doug Johnston had no relation to Charles Morgan or his case. Mm-hmm. He was just a normal guy. He didn't have any enemies, or at least none that would kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just a normal guy. Some guy.
Yeah.
He was found with a single gunshot behind his left ear from close range.
Ooh. Okay.
Like execution style.
Yeah.
Initially, police believed it to be a suicide. But Doug was right-handed, and the bullet wound was on his left side. And on top of that, he had no gunshot residue on his hands, and no mm-hmm. weapon was found at the scene.
Yeah, he didn't do that.
Right. To this day, Doug Johnston's case remains unsolved. Now, on the surface, that seems like a totally unrelated murder. Like, Kim, why are you telling us about this?
Just getting ready to ask.
But Don Devereaux believes that the bullet that killed Doug Johnston was meant for him.
Oh, okay.
And here's why. Doug Johnston and Don Devereaux drove almost identical cars.
Mm-hmm.
Both men at the time drove Toyota station wagons.
Huh, it's
in
the
addition
90s.
To that, oh, well, yeah, it's the 90s. Everybody's in a station wagon. In addition to that, Doug worked directly across the street from Don's house.
Oh.
And that is where he was killed.
Oh, my God. Okay.
In fact, Doug's work and Don's home address were only one number off from being identical.
Oh, that's creepy.
About a year later, after Doug Johnston was killed,
mm-hmm.
Don Devereaux got in touch with another reporter who had ties or sources in the CIA.
Uh-huh.
And they did confirm to him that Doug Johnston's death was a botched hit. They also went on to tell Don that he still had active contracts out on him at that time
uh-huh.
for his investigation into Charles Morgan's murder.
Ooh.
Now, as far as I can find, Don Devereaux is still alive and well today.
Okay.
But weirdly, apart from the Unsolved Mysteries episode he was interviewed for, I was unable to find a single article, a single blog post, or even a reference towards Charles Morgan anywhere from Don Devereaux.
Uh-huh.
Like, if he ever published any of his investigation work into this case,
yeah,
it's not there anymore.
Maybe somebody settled.
After all of this and his interview and this reported botched hit where he was almost killed for this
yeah.
crime, I just thought somewhere out there I'm gonna find something that Don Devereaux wrote, and he's gonna talk about this case and how he knew he was on a hit list besides just this episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah,
but there's nothing.
Ooh, that's super creepy. Like, it sounds like maybe he just stopped.
I think that he got scared enough to stop
yeah.
looking into it.
I sure would. I'm glad this one's your story, Kim.
Right? One last weird thing about this case.
Uh-huh.
Charles also had a connection to Danny Casalera.
This is what I was waiting for.
Who we did. I know. Because if you haven't heard it, Ashley and I both yeah. actually did a full episode over Danny Casalera and the octopus. It's episode number 5.
Mm-hmm.
It is a wild ride all the way through, just like this one. And if you haven't heard it, go listen to it, and this will seem to make a lot more sense or be a lot more significant. Now, the two men never met. Charles and Danny never met each other. But in 1991, Danny Casolaro reached out to Don Devereaux. He knew that Don had been working on Charles Morgan's case, and he asked Don to send over all the information he had on it.
Okay.
But before Don had a chance to mail the documents, Danny Casolaro was found dead in his hotel room from another alleged suicide.
Damn! That explains it. It's not the stories he was doing.
I know.
Oh my God. All this time I'm trying to figure out what is happening. That was it. That's got to be it.
It's got to be a piece of it. I mean, we know that Danny was working to uncover the octopus.
Right.
And according to him, members of this secret organization included both mafia members and also members of our own government.
Right.
Both of which are present in the Charles Morgan case.
Ah! Oh, I got goosebumps.
I know. So what was it that Danny Casolaro wanted with case files from a 23-year-old murder at that point?
He was a journalist, too.
He was a journalist,
unless
too.
Unless he was just planning on, like, breaking this case wide open. Because he had, like, information that was, like, going to blow people's minds or something?
I mean, he'd been researching all these things for so long. I have to feel like the Charles Morgan case tied into what he was digging into somehow.
Yeah, it had to have.
I mean, he wouldn't have just said, hey, give me all the information you have on this case, and then suddenly he's dead before he can even get
exactly.
the information.
Exactly. I feel like we know too much.
I know. Guys, if we disappear... If you can figure out who killed Danny Casolaro, that was probably who got us.
Wow.
So when you consider all of this information, the question of who killed Charles Morgan will probably never be answered. I mean,
not the way we want
it. We're not going to find out.
Yeah.
No. As far as I'm concerned, Charles was killed by the mafia.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. That's it. He was killed by the mafia.
Yeah.
But... was he killed because of those documents he had showing the illegal transactions?
Mm-hmm.
Was it because of his recent testimony? Or was he really working as an undercover agent to take down mob families? And that's what got him killed.
Honestly, it could be all three.
It could be.
He could have just had his hand in too many pots.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many unanswered questions here that we will... probably never get the answers to, because everyone who has tried to find them was silenced.
Uh-huh.
From law enforcement to journalists, they were all silenced.
Wow. I don't even know what to say.
I mean, there's so much to this case. The $2 bill.
Yeah.
Like, what did that mean? Was it really for the FBI? Was it just some coat? I mean, who was Green Eyes? Who was this woman? What was he? How did he find out about the hit on him? Did he really have his throat painted with some hallucinogenic drug?
We won't know that for sure because he never went to the hospital.
No, he didn't.
Jeez. I don't know why he would lie about that part, though, at the very least.
I mean, his wife fed him water with an eyedropper for over a week before he could talk again. Something happened to him. I can't say it was a drug painted in his throat, but something happened to him.
I don't know. That's an elaborate prank or fake death or whatever he was trying to do.
I mean, and there's so many theories out there. You can go research on the internet and find a billion theories on what happened to Charles Morgan. And there's even some theories out there that he really did commit suicide and he just did this and he had the gunshot residue. But I cannot accept that he killed himself.
That's too far of a stretch. And here's the thing I believe about conspiracy theories. Like, I get so far sucked into them. I know I do. But I also believe that there are conspiracy theories thrown out there to get rid of the actual conspiracy theory.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just...
absolutely.
Yeah, they just convolute it so much that it's just like, everything sounds weird, everything's crazy, so we do the Occam's razor thing and be like, okay, well, maybe he did kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the most
thing.
It's
like this whole story seems like it belongs more in a movie than in real life.
It does.
But this all happened.
See, that's the part that blows my mind. Like, I feel like I was watching a movie. Like, this all just seems crazy.
I know. It doesn't seem believable, but it happened. It was real. Yeah. Charles Morgan was shot in the back of the head in the desert, and police ruled his death a suicide.
Which is insane.
And Danny Casolaro was killed. Well, died. Danny Casolaro was trying to look into the Charles Morgan case before he died. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I was always on the fence because maybe, just maybe, he did slit his own wrists and killed himself, because it's entirely possible. But now that's over. He did not kill himself, and neither did Charles Morgan.
Oh, yeah. Charles Morgan, Danny Casolaro, I'm still kind of like, eh, maybe. But Charles Morgan, no, I'm fully on board that he was murdered and it's a big cover-up thing.
Yeah. Doug Johnston now, didn't kill himself either.
Yeah. Doug Johnston, which they knew that wasn't a suicide, right, but they just couldn't solve it. I mean, it was just a single bullet wound.
Yeah.
That was it.
That's so weird. That's very terrifying if I were Don Devereaux.
And what if the people who came to Ruth's house really were FBI agents?
I mean, that's still entirely possible. That's still on the table. It could be, but the way everything has played out, it sounds like it's just a couple of guys who are pretending to be FBI so they could tear her house apart for some evidence.
Yeah. But there's also the fact that the FBI was like, who's Charles Morgan?
Well, I thought about that. And, like, don't they use, like, code names and stuff? Or maybe that's the movie. I don't know. But, like, they can easily say, I don't know. I've never heard Charles Morgan. Now, I know of whatever, a fake name, but we don't know a Charles Morgan. And that's just their way to keep things under wraps. I don't know.
Ruth has said that she has read that passage in Ecclesiastes over and over and over throughout the years.
Yeah.
And whatever code is supposed to be in it, whatever meaning that passage has, she's never been able to figure it out.
That irks me because I'm not good at decoding things anyway. Like, the people that can do that, that's great for you guys. But not knowing, like he even referenced it. What does it mean?
I know. It was written on that $2 bill that he had pinned inside his underwear.
Yeah, as if he were hiding it.
This bill was so important to him that he wanted to make sure that they didn't find it if they searched his body.
Yeah.
But why? What made it so important? What does that code mean? What significance are those Spanish names? What significance are the signers of the Declaration of Independence being numbered 1 through 7? Why does he have a map drawn of smuggling counties, unless maybe he was getting the gold and platinum smuggled in?
I mean,
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. And like I said, Don Devereaux believes that that's simply because we're missing a piece of information.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Not that I'm a skilled investigator, I guess, but that's what it sounds like to me. That sounds right. But if he was a Freemason, maybe, I don't know, maybe they could find a book or something. I don't know.
I know. Every time you think, like, couldn't you just do this? Couldn't they just look into, and then you're like, no, that wouldn't work. I mean, how would you even go about it?
Yeah.
I have so many questions left unanswered about this case. And we will likely never get answers because
That's the way they wanted to keep
officially,
it
officially. Yeah, they don't want people to know, and because officially Charles Morgan's death was nothing more than a tragic suicide.
Thanks for listening.
Like us on Facebook at True Crimes and Weird Times Podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at True Crimes Weird Times.
Email us your stories at truecrimesweirdtimes@gmail.com.
Can't wait for the next episode? Check out our Patreon for bonus episodes and more.
And if you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review.
Bye!